This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you, voicemail lady. This is Mike Sessa, Jason Task Force call. I feel like this is Star Trek. Coordinates are November 6th, Monday, 103. We have in attendance Jim Kelly, Jeff Elliott, Mike Sessa, Mike Morris, Susan McCracken, Mei Hung, John Lovell, Steve Margoneau. Did I miss anybody?
I think that's it.
Thanks, everybody, for joining. Michael, you know, we can run through our normal agenda and talk about stuff. I also wanted to do some planning because
okay, you can start with that. What's in the agenda for today is just going through other XML features and talking about them one at a time and how we can make it so that the JSON that's produced is better for JSON programmers. So
right.
That's our purpose there. So there's a whole bunch of features I listed in the minutes from last week for the discussion and the agenda this week. So we can go ahead and talk about planning, and then when we're done with that, we can start with that agenda.
Okay, cool. I only think we need about 5 or 10 minutes because all the information is on the homepage. It's called I stole the name Interop. I had a name something. Just to back up a sec, we had a lot of momentum up in Toronto, and we've had a lot of momentum on a couple of things. And on my way home from Toronto, I just had the sense that May is too far away, and what would we do? And with the holidays coming up, and then it struck me that we had I had that same feeling a few years back with EdExchange, and but I sensed other people had that same feeling. A lot of people have been talking to me. So I floated an idea to have that meeting way in 2015. And I did the same thing here and took that same approach and just floated the idea. And, of course, it's a cost issue for everybody. So there's the cost issue to always address. But also we have the ability to do a real two-day concentrated, I call it crowdsourcing, for people that can make it in person. You know, I tried to structure an agenda together that's specifically about pest technology and things that I see as critical that PESCO is working on. It's not in any order of prioritization, but it was just to be held in San Francisco because when we had the summit this past week in Toronto, the folks from California are prohibited from traveling because they're state employees. So we missed out on having the California group there. We also missed out on a few other folks from the left coast when we do stuff. You know, we've been on the right coast, on the east coast for a few meetings. So floated the idea, heard back from a number of folks immediately that they could participate and make it a, you know, keep your budget as minimal as possible for those people that can fly in. And for PESC members, again, to make it as inclusive as possible, we'll have dial-in. But again, it'll be all in Pacific time, so East Coasters this time won't be the beneficiaries of the meeting being held there. They might have to sacrifice because, you know, a meeting at 4 o'clock in the afternoon there might be 7 o'clock on the East Coast. But this is just the one time that we'll start. So, again, I broke down the program, and everything is online. You can go to the homepage and look, PESC Interop, or you can go to the Fall Summit page. I've put it up a number of places. But just quickly, Michael, just so that everybody understands some of the key points, as I said, is, you know, maximize in-person convening, crowd power, share and coordinate timelines, and inter-project opportunities. I think there are a number of them, and I'm going to talk about that in a second, and help shape our sort of strategy as we're looking at something that's going to be, you know, used, we think, with, you know, 3 to 5 years. So PESC members, hotel on your own, food, beverage on your own, no breaks. You can take breaks, but they would be on your own, dress code casual. PESC is just going to get a meeting room with a U-shaped room, speakerphone, projector. Folks can get their own hotel rooms. And then for PESC members and other folks, we would have dial-in. So we already have the schedule. But we would make the Jason Task Force open to the public, as we have agreed that that's the way we want to proceed. So we're including the public in this type of an event, but then restricting it to PESC members and invited guests and partners for the remainder of the program. So there are, you know, five major parts to the program. One was the Jason Task Force. And, Michael, online I wrote up a large, a 5 to 6 page session descriptions. And some of the issues that I think need to be raised, and I did a very high-level summary here, is I listed some resources, so our page with all of the information. I also put all the history together, so when we launched the Jason Task Force, so people can understand and read and, you know, make sure that our mission is remaining true. And also put an attachment up on the standards development page, Michael. I went through some of my documents and found some of the Jason examples that folks have been exchanging, and I saved them down to a file. And so I kind of put them all together in a big PDF. So if you went to the and this is all in an email I sent you this morning. So it lists in an attachment all the Jason examples in PDF. I hope the PDF worked well. And then there was a document, Michael, that I couldn't remember who it sent it around, but it was called Using Jason Schema by Joe McIntyre. I can take it down if folks don't like it, but I dumped it in the folder for a reason. And then we also have sort of the schedule that you can see as well for the remainder of the yep.
So what was the reason you dumped the Using Jason Schema file into the folder?
I don't know, because I thought someone gave it to me to post and said this was a good thing to read. I don't know. I can take it down.
Oh, it's relevant. I think it's a good resource to have. It's just, you know, I also think it's kind of two pages ahead in the book with where the conversation is currently. So I just wanted to know if you thought it was immediately relevant or something we would get to eventually.
I have no idea. I am not making any type. I was looking at this strictly as, ooh, someone sent me a document that they liked, and I should share it. That's it.
I remember looking at this, but I don't think I was the one that recommended it.
Okay. And if anything, I'm just looking to instigate your brain power, because you guys are the Jason experts, or you're going to be.
Yeah, I think that's more.
So I'm trying to instigate your brain power. So if you don't like it, we take it down. We put up other resources, send them around. You know, we're trying to be open and collaborative. So that was done in that spirit. I have no judgment on that. And then just quickly, some of the things, some of the strategic considerations, and John, you know, I really wanted to stress the partnership with A4L, too, to make sure folks know that they can partner with us as well, too. We welcome them, but they have to agree to our mission and in what we have agreed to. And I simply said, because we're trying to expand, we all have design legacy issues. We got to deal with those. What's the relationship to Jason LD? I'm still trying to find an expert speaker. This is a question that Alex raised. No, and by the way, Alex sent his apologies. He couldn't make this meeting. But Alex raised this question. Will the demand for Jason, in part due to a benefit of being less verbose, ultimately impact that benefit and require expansion, because you're going to have to expand Jason? Does it then just become the new XML? And what are the needs of the stakeholders over, you know, the learner life cycle? So we are sort of sailing on the open, you know, sea here. And let's call some ports and see, you know, what is a friendly, you know, relationship there. We should always be looking to make sure, you know, what we're doing is in line with the rest of the industries. And then, Michael, just quickly, the second part was the request and the response for all PESC-approved standards. You folks can read up on that. I think that's really simple, However, it's the coordination of it, putting it through the PESC process, through the change control board, through the technical advisory board. But I think that needs to happen. Then we have an extended period on ed exchange and stuff like the ed exchange steering committee and terms. And I listed 9 strategic considerations. We have the PESC geocode, a list of resources. We also have 8 strategic considerations, so this is an extended amount of time. And then we have the academic credentialing group, and that includes the task force, credential mapping, credential engine, blockchain. And this is actually going to open up to include, I'm actually coordinating with the folks at Credential Engine, and they want to participate in this part of it as well as in the JSON part, which is nice because they might have a different perspective or, you know, a way to help us out and, you know, just improve our approach or, you know, Michael says we've learned a lot from A4L, and they've saved us a tremendous amount of research and time. So forever thank you, John, and, you know, and Mike Reynolds, too, and Alex for being so open and collaborative, and hopefully we can, you know, glean some wisdom and knowledge from Credential Engine and the folks that they want to bring in. So it kind of picked up a little bit. I'll stop there. All this information is online. The hotel, I'm just waiting to hear back from today. But again, this isn't a, you know, I would hope that people could be there in person. However, I know not everybody can. So there's the equal opportunity to dial in on the PESC line free of charge. So let me stop there, Michael, and see if you have any questions or, you know, as being the chair, you know, I need you to be able to be there or coordinate if you are not.
Yeah, I think it looks very likely I can be there.
Okay.
So,
Michael, what were the dates of it?
The 16th and the 17th of January. It's a Tuesday, Wednesday.
The 17th of January. Okay. I'll ask Larry.
Okay.
As long as the flights can get out, we're okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, John, too, you know, I thought of you guys, you know, because there were lots of meetings I would like to participate. So, you know, if for whatever reason you are not or there's another, you know, A4L person that wants to dial in, you know, you should feel as, you know, that the – I know dialing in sometimes introduces a barrier of participation, but we really, you know, hope you guys can participate as equals in that section.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, San Francisco is a very short plane ride for me, so.
Okay. I didn't know where you're located.
Bellingham, Washington.
Okay. Well, I also looked up the rates and I tried to look at dates. Okay. I tried to look at other meetings and I tried to look. The rates are pretty low, actually, for San Francisco because it's after the new year. The week before, they were through the roof. But that week, they were pretty low. So the full announcement hasn't been made yet because I don't have the hotel name. I'm expecting it by the end of the day. So then I'll do a major announcement. You'll see, you'll know it's a major announcement. It might be called major announcement. With all the information and confirmation, so folks can make their travel arrangements or, you know, schedule it off in their calendar to participate by telephone.
Michael,
also just quickly, Jeff, before you jump in, if folks want to add to the agenda that I've written for the JSON group, the session description, or add resources, you know, this is for all of us because I think JSON is the next bullseye for us, and I think a lot of folks will adopt it the way they adopted XML because of riding off the success of EDI. So I think this is a strategic direction, not only for PESC, but what we communicate to the rest of, you know, the community. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
No, I was just going to say I should be able to be there Tuesday. I have meetings in Pleasanton, though, Wednesday and Thursday. So but I'll already be in the area, so that'll work out for me.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. I would ask if you would consider swapping EdExchange and credential the credentialing discussion so that I could participate in that on Tuesday, but I don't know how far you are in actually locking down the schedule and attendees and everything, but you had mentioned Credential Engine was also interested in that component, and so if you put those on the JSON task force, I could, and I'm being selfish right now is all I'm doing, so.
No, that's, let me take you off speaker. I've looked at this from many perspectives.
Yeah.
So just to know, let you know what one of the other shells are in the shell game of moving sessions, is some of the folks from California might be driving in because they can't stay the night, so
right.
They drive in the morning. They wanted to be there for the JSON, so they wanted JSON and EdExchange on the same day. But that's just, I will take that into consideration because if the Credential Engine folks come back and say they, you know, needed to be on a different time, then that's another consideration I have to take into account. So I guess my short answer to you, Jeff, is yes, I'll take that into consideration. And it's not final until until we're all there. But, yeah, I know people need to plan, and that's why I'm trying to really lock it down.
Yeah, and like I said, part of that's just me being selfish. But, yeah, I'm when I looked at the dates and looked at our Oracle meetings, it was like, okay.
Yeah.
Oracle is the 17th, 18th, and 19th. This is the 16th and 17th. And so,
Yeah. Well, one of the other considerations, too, is we have a number of folks that are that cross-pollinate. They're on both the GeoCode Steering Committee and the EdExchange Steering Committee.
Yeah.
So structuring it like that is they could fly in the morning, do EdExchange, wake up, stay one night, do GeoCode, and fly out the next day. Just another consideration, but it all can change. It's malleable, I guess, is the word, right?
Yeah. Those of us that have two hops don't have much choice in coming in the morning. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, on such short notice, I mean, we haven't hit a big barrier yet, so we'll see. Any other questions? Again, it's on the homepage. It's pre-written out. If you, Michael, if after this meeting, you know, I'll listen in. And if we want to change the agenda, add resources again, or add them to the website. But again, the you know, the five big things that I raised were, you know, with PESC and A4L being strong in XML, we have design legacy issues that we've talked about, and we need to figure those out. You know, I'm keeping it very, very general. What's the impact of JSON LD? And is the demand for standalone, you know, JSON transformation, or both? And the answers could be different, like we talked about, between the A4L community and the PESC community, and that's okay because we're swimming in the same direction.
Yep.
Will JSON expand? And is that existentialistic? And what are the needs, and who do we need to talk to? So if folks want to add other considerations, adjust those, you know, it's open. And I welcome your feedback on any of it, too, because this also glides right into request and response. If we're going to start that development, do we do it in XML? Do we do it in JSON? And so, you know,
do it in both.
Yeah. So the conversation kind of leans, you know, through the agenda.
Okay. That's what you have, Michael?
Yep. If no one has anything else, I'll go on mute.
Okay. I wanted to go through the action items because it'll take Michael off mute again. just so we can close some of these out, because I think because we're taking a little bit different direction, I think a lot of these action items probably need to be closed, and so that we don't have them hanging there. We got 7 action items that are open, and I think we need to close most of them. The first one is contact the first week's participants that do not have email addresses on record to see if they're still interested in participating. I think that's done, right? So we got that.
Yes, and one of them I reached out to. It was Mark from he's in the Canadian community. So
okay,
we got one back. Well, I reached out to one.
Okay, so that's great, and those will not appear next week.
Cool.
The Senate alternative approach to Gosner for attributes. Well, I think we've gone an entirely different way on that, so I think we can close that one. Anybody disagree?
No, I'll mention Michael Morris that maybe we should recap the face-to-face meeting and kind of the 2 decisions that were kind of made. But doesn't that tie in there?
It does. Yeah, it does. And also the meeting last Monday where we said and tentatively that any new schemas that we developed would not have any attributes. So that was the...
Yeah.
So I guess that's the summary, yes. The reason that this can be closed is that as we create these tentative design rules, and that's the approach we're taking, we're saying that we would like to avoid having attributes because attributes do not translate well to JSON, especially when they're empty or when you have them and you have to deal with special semantics for things like text. So when the attribute appears, so it makes it inconsistent. So we'll close that one.
Okay.
A third one, get a speaker for Jason LD. That's Michael's still working on that. So we'll leave that one. Need to set up a presentation. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm not sure what you once said about Jason LD, but I happen to know who implemented JSON LD for the CEBS standards, and I'd be happy to connect you.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, we were just, I brought up the issue of JSON LD. I heard it in conversations. Alex talked about it a little bit, but we were hoping to have someone come in and be able to not only just talk about it, but have us figure out how it would apply in a PESC world. And it's almost a strategic question. Working with the credential engine folks, their mantra is linked data. So, is that where that part of the industry, is headed? And so we need to know, a little bit more intelligence gathering. That's where it was going, John. A little bit of intelligence, a little bit of an education, and someone we could ask questions to.
Okay. I'll just throw out there, Michael, that we did a whole foyer into JSON LD a few years back, and it ultimately didn't fit within the SIF standards.
Yeah.
Alex believes it's matured, and maybe that's not true anymore. So, yeah, it would be interesting to get kind of a state of JSON LD update.
Yep, and we've heard, because we interact with David Weber. He's been a consultant with Oracle, and he works on the CAMS program, and is a renowned author and worldwide traveler. But he's also involved with the NEEM program, which is, Department of Homeland Security and some of the other federal agencies. And he says they're gung-ho on JSON LD, but, I asked him, is anybody implementing it? And, the feedback I got was lukewarm, that not everybody's ready for it. And so what does that mean for standards organizations? Do you jump, what do they call it, jump the shark? or do you, you know, do you pull the trigger too, quick, or set the implementation too fast, or, for such a strategic, item, we want to make sure we get it right. Not that we can't fail, but, we should do our due diligence and gather some, good intelligence.
Yeah, oh, I'd like to be in on that conversation because it impacts this conversation, and we've had a rough road with it so far. But there's certain things I know to look for.
Yeah. Well, that kind of person I would even ask to be, part of the January 16th and 17th meeting, whether they can dial in or be there in person if they're, I don't know where they might be, just like I didn't know where Jeff Elliott would be. But they could dial in as well so that, we don't have to wait, but we could actually do some preparation, give them questions in advance, give them a specific time, and give them a half an hour so that we expand the circle.
If that's the way you want to handle it, he's unlikely to travel. It's not his favorite thing. He is up in my neck of the woods. So.
Well, we can have more than one as well. So.
Huh?
We could have more than one speaker, so having him dial in, be there for his perspective would be welcome.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to him, see if he's interested.
Sure.
Okay, good. So I'll change the name there to John Lovell from Michael Sessa. Need to set up a presentation recording of David. And I haven't done that. We were looking at different types of metadata and how we'll approach things. One of the things we were looking at was the CAM processor and the CAM tool. And I'm not sure that I think it's too early for that right now. So I think I'm going to, unless I hear an objection, just put this on hold. But I'll leave it out here. I think it's too early until we. Refine our approach a little bit, because then you start talking about using tools to implement the decisions you've made. And this is one tool that, the CAM produces a intermediate language, which is an XML, and to identify objects, and it's used to translate back and forth. So they use it for things like, well, you're in this dialect of XML, and you're going to use NEME, so here's how we can translate from a regular schema to a NEME schema, for example, and change things. So CAM's an interesting tool for doing those sorts of things, but I think that's premature until we move our approach further on. Any disagreement with that? So I'll leave it up here, and I'll just put a later due date. Okay, you should have this from, I sent this out to the team last week, these minutes. Again, get volunteers to write a paragraph with references about each solution to PerJSON. I think instead of some of those are tool solutions, some of them are using techniques that have been used by others like NEME. I'm going to also put that one on hold. Because we were going to use it to help us identify if we were going to adopt one of those solutions, but I think we've gone ahead and said we're going to do this ourselves, and we're going to determine. Then we'll start looking at tools and approaches there. Next one for Jeff.
So
I've forgotten about this one.
The design decisions. Sorry.
What did you say, John?
You're saying instead of saying, this is how we're going to translate, we're going to start with this is how we're going to design things, right?
Yes, this is how we're going to design things. Then we can worry about translation so it becomes clean. I mean, that's what we're thinking about all the time. We're thinking if you don't have attributes, then it comes across very cleanly. A lot of the issues that was raised in that A4L document that we read get resolved with attributes when you don't have any, right? it solves
exactly.
That problem
exactly.
Quite well. So you don't have to worry about those things then. So, yes, that's the point. We're going to go ahead with this approach. talking about how to change our design rules to make easy translation between the two. the Speedy server must use an EDI header. Is that, that's true, right, Jeff?
Well, as, just as you had forgotten about this, so had I. so I will confirm that with folks tomorrow.
Okay.
Send a note. Yeah.
I'm not sure it's important. I'm not sure it's important anymore, but I, why did we, do you remember why we raised it?
No, I really don't. Other than, you know, it was going to be a mixed case message because, I just don't remember. We thought it was important at the time.
Yeah, I think it was just we were looking at the consequences of sending JSON using this tool, and the fact is that we wanted to know if you had to have a bunch of other information in a form that's not JSON to use the tool, right? So that was, I think that was the issue.
Right, but the tool is already used for XML, so, you know, changing the payload, I don't think it'd make a lot of sense.
Right, but you'd still have to develop an EDI header.
Yes, and yeah. that's what I will confirm tomorrow with the technical folks on Speedy that actually know that stuff a lot better than I do.
Yeah. The next one is send a note to ERUG on no attribute rule. I still have 11 hours to do that, so it's 11/6 was the due date. So I better do that this afternoon. Okay, and just a review of what we talked about last week. Any repeatable element with a max occurs greater than one in XML schema must be represented as a JSON array, even if it's empty. No attributes will be allowed in next generation XML, so the JSON objects are represented without extra semantics to represent an attribute, no at sign, etc. And missing attributes will not require a pound text or some similar construct in the JSON object. And if this next one, I read this and I realized it's not clear enough. If translating two ways between XML and JSON, the sequence must be kept, even though JSON doesn't require it. And we really meant there, we're talking about objects, not arrays. So arrays already have order. So we don't have to worry about those, but this had to do with objects, and object properties don't have any order in JSON. But we're saying we need to, if we do a translation, we'll keep that order if it's a sequence in XML. And coming back from JSON, we won't, if we're translating XML, we won't change the order because you can. JSON doesn't care what the order of those are. So that's where we are, and then we're the agenda for today, which we have 23 minutes, and I noticed that we were missing some. There are some other things here that we need to talk about, especially some of the handling of numbers and dates. I didn't put on here, but we can handle those and just go through those and get the discussion going on what should happen there. The first one, if you have your minutes in front of you, is the global attributes that can be used in any XML instance document, XML lang and XML space. The tab recommended that several years ago, that if somebody wanted to specify a language, they could use the XML language construct. I don't think anybody's ever done that. Anybody ever used the language construct? Anybody know of that? It is allowed as an attribute in XML, and I don't think the schemas will, you don't have to specify it. It just, if you have it there, the schema will still pass. But there was a request that said we want to be able to specify the language of the tags, not the tags themselves, but the content of the tags. We want to be able to specify a language for that. And instead of creating a new construct, we said just use what's in there, what's available through XML. So I don't think this is an issue, but is this something that anybody sees as a very necessary construct or to convey information? You certainly could add language to something if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a big deal. Anybody want to make a comment on it? Just wanted to make sure we understood that that's a recommendation we made, and then we're saying, well, let's not do that because we're not allowing any attributes or in the future. Or we could make an exception for that one, and then
what do
you do? Yeah, then you're sort of stuck. So
yeah, no, I think it'd be much better that if we run into use cases like that, we define a field for the language information to go into, so that we stick to the rules.
Exactly. Yep. So the language would, the advantage of having an attribute language is obviously has to do with the hierarchy in XML, is that you can cover huge sections of your XML with a particular language. You don't have to repeat it over and over again. So certainly a JSON programmer wouldn't, you know, if we put this is a top level language as a high level property of a top level object, and said the semantics are this applies to everything below it, I guess you could do that, but that wouldn't, you know, that I don't think, you know, a normal JSON programmer would think that made sense, but because why would it apply to the lower level objects necessarily? Any other comments on that? I'll just say we're not going to do it. We're going to withdraw our recommendation. Steve, you were on the team when we recommended. In fact, I think you did the research, didn't you, Steve?
Indeed, I did. I'm just going elbow deep in the XML ballot bowl here and finding all the documentation I put together. It was about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Almost seven. I know we were asked to put together a recommendation about the language attribute, but like you said, I don't think anyone ever used it.
Yeah, And I should ask John, do you use XML language for anything?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, we've taken the English-speaking world by storm. We're active in, you know, all of North America. We're active in the United Kingdom. We're active in Australia. We're active in New Zealand. You know, everybody speaks English of some flavor.
Yeah. Okay, the next one is one that, again, we don't struggle with very much, but and just because of the nature of our data model, which is a hierarchical data model, we don't have too many references or object things tying objects together. Relationships between different objects. If we have an object, we subsume it under another object if we want it to be related. So this is not a big deal, but it's a big deal for A4L, I think, right? How you do referencing in data models. And that's one of the reasons that people are proposing let's use JSON-LD for linked data, so we can have relationships between various objects that aren't hierarchical. So So some of the mechanisms are used, the attributes, you have an identifier and you can declare it as type ID, and the XML schema will do some, an ID ref, and the XML schema will do things for you to tell you that those are valid references.
Yeah, so I think for this group, right, there would, you know, it, and, you know, maybe April will have to bring suggestions to this group, but as far as design principles, yeah, we need to, you know, have, I mean, with our RESTful infrastructure, we need to have an identified key on all our objects, which we do currently, but we currently put them in an attribute. We should probably move them to, you know, a root level element to use XML words, so that, you know, that converts and follows the rules we've already started to lay down. So there's that piece. And then, of course, the other piece is, you know, what do the references look like? Oftentimes, we move those references as attributes. So at the root, you'll say, hey, this is this thing, and it's unique, but it relates to this student in this school who has this, you know, when they're, you know, linked to this teacher, and then all that stuff goes down below. We currently convey that as attributes. I think it is going to be necessary to figure out, you know, how we make each of those things root level elements and whether they're simple or complex. We do need to, as part, like talking to JSON people, we do need to lean towards, you know, simple flat content as much as we can. That doesn't mean if we have a need for a nested structure, we can't use it. But given how you currently structure your data exchanges, that may be a bigger topic for you than for us.
Say that again, John. I missed that. How it's bigger for us.
Yeah. One of the things we run into as we do JSON is, you know, there's JSON, right? And like we've all learned through our experience with trying to convert XML to JSON, it's not that you can't convert XML to JSON, it's that the JSON developer doesn't like the JSON you produce. And there's
right.
Reasons for that. Some of them are good, if we're talking, you know, Gosner, which we both played with. Some of them are just kind of cultural. And one of the cultural things I run into consistently with JSON people is they tend to like, well, I mean, there's also a movement called microservices, right?
Right.
And the JSON people tend to also be microservice people. And so they like to have, you know, small packets of JSON that are very flat and very, you know, well scoped and often come out of a microservice. They don't like it when the JSON gets too many nested things in it. They don't like it when their paths get long. They're very lazy when they punch in their paths. So something where we've got a lot of linked data, but you've got lots of little objects, if you will, you know, lends itself to that. Your paths are going to tend to be smaller. If you've got, you know, big payloads with big nested pieces, it's going to be the opposite way around. And I honestly haven't looked at your data objects very closely. When you say you have, you know, mostly nested data, I don't know if that means you go really, really deep or if you just have, you know, a lot of stuff in a single object and it's already fairly flat.
It goes pretty deep because of using complex types, we have really fairly, really long chains of complex types. So yes,
yeah.
Ours is very deep, and you're saying, yeah, that's something. So I got you. I understand your point now. Is that it's really the deepness of our structures. These become very. I mean, you know, you end up with expressions in JavaScript that are 20 dots long, right?
Right.
I did an implementation. We did an automated implementation guide, and had something similar for the headings were generated by the elements and their path. And this, we ended up with these big long paths. They were used as headings in the documents, and they went to two lines.
Yeah.
So you know, because you had so many so many levels that we ended up with two lines of text there, even though the element names weren't that long. So, I understand what you're saying there. Yeah, we have a great problem with deepness, yes.
I don't think deepness is really a problem, but I come from an XML world, right? So it's one of those things. As we talk about JSON, well, then we start talking about JSON-LD. And then, well, what does JSON-LD lead to? It leads to microservices. And why do people have microservices? Because they have a lot of little chunks of related data. Well, why do they have lots of little chunks of related data? So that when they work with any individual service, it's simple. I will point out this also leads to, throughput concerns when in especially high latency environments, because instead of getting big packets of data, you tend to get little packets of data, and then you move things to the cloud, and you try to talk to somebody in Australia, and all of a sudden things don't work so well. So I mean, it's a path towards madness in some ways. So, but that's the culture we're talking into, right? JSON isn't just a format. If you talk about it as a culture, it's a culture of simplicity. It's a culture of lots of broken up things and a lot of flat little things. And so I think that's important. We don't have to go whole hog and say we're going to change everything and do it that way. But, you know, SIF is kind of somewhere in between. People complain that even the linked SIF objects are too big. And other people come along and just want to add to them. So it's kind of how far down into the JSON culture do we wind up? Not necessarily a conversation for this group. If you're going to start talking about JSON-LD, that's really the path you're walking. And so
let me jump in and see if John, let me jump in and see if some other folks want to weigh in, whether it's Susan or May or Jeff or Jim Kelly. Anybody have any response to that? Or
this is Jim. I do not. I'm following along.
Yes, this is May. I try to follow too.
It's Susan, and I'm deferring to.
Are we confusing you?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to give you all an opportunity.
Make sure everybody understands. Yeah, I mean, this is an issue, the microservices. And I'm seeing in the APIs I've been working with lately, I've been seeing a lot of these guys have, as part of their data, they have a URL, which is just another web service call. And so in your programming, you use that URL to get more data. So you're chaining these URLs together, and then that particular piece of data will also have a URL to give you more information, more detailed information about sub-objects. So that's one of the ways they handle hierarchy is you're going to make many, many calls to those services. So, that's really a good point. And we're going to have some huge objects.
It sounds Michael, is there a relationship there to the bot movement? The bots, the robots, the automation, the artificial intelligence that's moving into higher education. You know, the bot services and how they're so automated on a high capacity scale.
Yeah, maybe I'm missing something.
Nothing. You just asked if there was a relationship with anything else, and I was just saying it sounds something like bots, but anyway.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
Because the bots will follow the URL and put all the data back together. Just so you know, we literally have schools in Australia that their link is through a satellite dish, and that means it's a geosynchronous satellite dish. It's almost exactly 2 seconds in latency just to go up to the dish, back down. And then, it works out to be 2 seconds of latency. I forget if that's request response or if that's one way.
Right.
So you can imagine having lots of little chunks of data that have to spawn lots of additional little requests very quickly becoming issues versus getting one nice big feed of data that streams at you. It's a real concern for us. One of the many reasons we weren't able to pull off JSON-LD 2 years ago. Like I say, it's matured some. We should continue to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a trade-off there, right? The issue is the longer it depends on the lower level link protocols, things like that, but the longer your piece of data you're sending at one time, the more chance that you're going to have to do a retransmission. The shorter, if you do a retransmission, it's fairly quick. But on the other hand, you have all those latency delays for every request response you make. So a huge trade-off there. And those networks are pretty reliable now. So I think you're right. The request response delays, those probably dominate. So that's an issue.
Yeah, I mean, and we've even found issues, you know, in Texas with hard lines with lots of little attendance events when we try to, you know, every kid that's marked absent from there, you know, fires off a payload in its own separate message, and that just doesn't work.
Yep.
So, yeah, it doesn't have to be, you know, there's several use cases where you got to think about how, you know, what makes sense to bundle together and what makes sense to break up and be judicious.
Yeah, what I'm seeing is that most of the links are to the leaves of the tree, right? The base information. So right now I'm working with SonarCube, which is a static analysis tool for code, and the API for that, trying to extract the data. And most of the stuff is just getting you the information, the top level URL, so then you can get the low level information back. So it makes sense, but they do. What's funny is they do have some calls that return huge amounts of data, whereas a lot of them don't. So I don't think anybody's really standardized on anything yet. These APIs are all over the place in terms of what we've been talking about, in terms of complexity, size, things like that.
Yeah, I think it's important when we look at education data that we realize we really are in a big data world.
Yep.
But it's little big data.
Yep.
How so?
So I guess the other point that I'd make about the referencing is with this URL, you know, these microservice schemes, which are just passing. I mean, you don't even have to construct the URL or the And most of this is, I'm not talking about post where you're trying to change data, but when you're doing gets, you know, they pass the whole URL, which is just an HTTPS request, and all you have to do is execute it, right? Put it in curl, and you don't even have to massage the URL. So it's kind of interesting.
Well, I mean, that's the theory, right? As soon as you put a piece of middleware in there to deliver some of these services, all of a sudden it's, well, what? You have to massage the URL and have it point at the middleware instead of the data provider. So,
yeah
everything's simple until you try to scale it out.
Good point. Okay, so this is a problem I don't think we're going to resolve today. This is part of the JSON-LD discussion. How we structure these things, how we do references, and we see how they do them in JSON. They do them with URLs. So that's one solution, and it's actually something we do similar things in terms of. I'm trying to think if we really don't do much ID ref kind of stuff in our. So we really don't have any internal linking in our data. So it's that is not what we do, but we may have to do something to make it work for the microservices. So I think continue to work on this one. I don't think we'll come up with a solution on this one today, and we are out of time. We didn't even get to namespaces, which I thought would be a good discussion.
That's probably my fault. I probably talked too long, but.
No, you didn't. That's good.
You want to give some quick homework, or you want to shoot out an email, Michael? We will meet next Monday again, right?
Yep, and I'll shoot out another agenda, and just so everybody's aware, and I'll add the excess date, and we need to discuss dates and numbers, and dates will end up as strings, obviously, Jason, but if numbers is a problem, because you can represent a number both as a string and as it is a raw data type. In
leaving the meeting.
It is a raw data type in JSON, so we'll discuss those next week as well.
Michael, quick question. Maybe folks can't answer immediately, but what about the Monday during Thanksgiving? Are folks taking the week off? Should we cancel that in advance?
We could. I haven't made any plans. Not sure what I'm doing over Thanksgiving. But yeah, everybody going to be here on Thanksgiving Monday, whenever that is?
It should be.
It's 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today. I don't think most people take the whole week off.
Okay, cool. Then it's not canceled, so that if folks start asking.
Yep.
You know, as they start preparing, it's full steam ahead.
There we go. Well, I'll write up the minutes, send them out, and with the agenda for next week.
Awesome.
Leaving the meeting.
John Lovell.
Thank you, John. He's gone.
Great. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Talk
Thank
next
you.
Week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Leaving the meeting.